This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why do the communists play these games after tragedies, after scandals? It's actually about you specifically. We'll talk about that. Liz Collin is here to give us a good look on what's going on in Minnesota. Jeffrey Tucker, all that, so much more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk. It's going to kind of be about that shooting that just took place at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but it's about so much more than that. It's really about every communist response to things like that. By the way, I should note, isn't it odd that we just had a legitimate attempted assassination of the president, the vice president, all the cabinet secretaries? It was like 5 minutes ago. It's already out of the news. We're used to it now. America has now come to accept that communists are just violent, and every now and then one of them's going to pop up and kill someone or try to. All right, so communists use certain tactics. It's important to understand why they use these tactics. Why do they do the things they do and say the things they say? First, they are mission focused. Maybe you are a mission-focused people, or you know people who are mission-focused people. They don't get caught up in the emotions or this or that. It's all about the mission. All about the mission. The mission is all that matters. That is how communists operate. That's what communists do. Their mission is the communist revolution. They are never concerned with death or scandal or theft. There's nothing that distracts them from the mission. As I have told you before, as shocking as it may be to believe, there is no human tragedy big enough that would make communists set aside the revolution and focus on it. If a nuclear bomb dropped on New York City 5 minutes from now, about 6 minutes from now, the communists in this country would unite on some sort of a message they thought moved the communist revolution forward. They are mission focused at all times. Which brings me to you. They understand that you probably are not. Not an insult. You're probably more of a human being with feelings, with emotions, with thoughts. You want to live in peace. You want people to be safe. You don't want to see people killed. You know, the communist doesn't share any of those feelings, but the communist understands that you do. So if there is any kind of a tragedy at all, where he thinks he can maybe, in a subtle way, lay the blame at your feet or at the feet of your side. He thinks that you, because you're sad, maybe scared, maybe angry, he thinks that you will lose focus on the mission and tell him, okay, yeah, I can't bear this anymore. Yes, take some of my freedom away. The guy who was the master of this was the great evil Barack Obama. Obama did this masterfully. Barack Obama is the author of what you see from every communist in the media and the Democrat Party today. When I say author, this is what I mean. When I was growing up, for most of my life, if there was something terrible, like a mass shooting of some kind, you would very rarely see any politician, any side, try to politicize it or use it. It was viewed as being in bad taste. And of course, it is in bad taste. In the wake of a terrible tragedy, people are dead, parents are crying. What do? You come together and you pray and you set aside those things and let's just come together. Barack Obama's a communist. He has no use for any of those emotions whatsoever. He is a mission-focused communist. Every mass shooting is an opportunity to disarm your political opponents so you can hopefully kill them one day. Here he was.
This is not about politics. This is about these families and families all across the country who are saying, let's make it a little harder for our kids to get gunned down.
The fact that 26-year-olds were gunned down in the most violent fashion possible, and this town couldn't do anything about it, was stunning to me. And so the question then becomes, what can we do about it? The only thing that's going to change is public opinion. If public opinion does not demand change in Congress, it will not change.
Each time we see one of these mass shootings, our thoughts and prayers are not enough.
Thoughts and prayers coming together. No. All those dead people for a communist? It's wonderful. It's a wonderful opportunity to move the revolution forward. Now, before we come back to that, there's a flip side to this. Let's say there's something the communists can't lay at your feet, at least not outright. Let's say there's a communist who did something bad, killed somebody, tried to kill somebody, and we know from his writings and his profile and everything, this is a communist, and usually, because there's such online people, we know exactly why. It's usually laid out exactly there. I went to try to kill them because they were right-wingers and I thought they were Nazis. The communists will usually tell you this. Okay, well, that you would think would create kind of a uncomfortable moment for the communists where they just kind of go quiet or something like that. No, not at all. You see, in those moments, they'll either lie about the motive or, let's go back to Barack Obama, they'll do what he did. He came out and he said, we don't have the details about the motives yet. But of course, we did have the details. We had the guy's manifesto. He laid out exactly in detail why he did what he did. So when the tragedy gets laid at the communist feet, that's when he does the, hey, look, it's confusing right now. You know what? Let me go check my notes. Let's do some research. We'll reconvene next week. Maybe we'll figure something out. It's a tactic. That's all. Anyway, back to what Barack Obama authored. Today, maybe you didn't remember that it was Obama who started all that. And maybe you didn't remember because today, it's just baked into the cake. Whenever there is a shooting or an attempted shooting of any kind, you already understand that every communist in the media and communist in the Democrat Party, you know exactly what they will do. You watch them do it. And remember, this is Barack Obama who created this.
You have people who are civilians who may or may not have had their own experiences with gun violence in this country. And as we know,
Thief Scalise
also there, a victim of gun violence as well. And there are others who we are not naming in the moment as well. And just to think about the prevalence of gun violence more broadly.
So that launched a conversation about gun violence and how, you know, somewhere between 275 and 300 people are shot every day in our country. And we lose more than 100 of them every day. So even as this nightmare was unfolding at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, dozens and dozens of people had been shot and killed in our country.
So that room was full of some of the most important political leaders in the country right now.
Right.
Now they know, they've lived it in their own flesh, the fear that our school children go through.
Yes.
Now they know what it's like to have to jump under a table the way that school children jump under a desk. You know, I still don't understand how Congress took no action after Sandy Hook, after 20 children between the ages of 6 and 7 were killed. But maybe now that they have felt the fear themselves, they will do something.
And what we also must confront is that our country is a country that has more guns than people.
more personal guns than people. So if we are not going to do something about the proliferation of guns and about the lack of gun control in this country, then we must do something to protect our citizens. And so the fact that he was able to move about so easily with loaded firearms should be terrifying to us and should be, again, an inflection point in this country for gun control, for safety, and for us all to come together as a people.
An opportunity. Communist tries to kill a bunch of people because he listens to hags like that. You think they're going to sit there and say, it's my fault. I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable. No. When you are unencumbered by any morality whatsoever, everything is just an opportunity to move the revolution forward. You have to understand this is all a tactic aimed at your heart. And you have to understand that you're dealing with people who don't feel shame in the same way you feel shame. They're just not capable of that because they are so mission-focused. You will debase yourself, lie, hurt people. You do whatever you have to do to move the mission forward. I have to read this guy's name for you. Raja Krishnamurthy. This is the kind of country we have now because we can't seal the border. Anyway, it's Trump's fault.
Well, I think that definitely the rhetoric needs to cool, but remember, his own rhetoric has inflamed the discourse in a way that we haven't seen before. I mean, just his Truth Social post the other day talking about ending Iranian civilization, or even his repost a couple days ago about how India is a hellhole and people like me, Indian Americans, are a problem in this country, only inflame the political discourse. It's got to come down. The discourse has to cool down, that it starts with the present. Of course, it extends to all of us. But to say that it's only one party doesn't really make sense and goes against all the facts.
There is no human tragedy, none, that will make these people back off, own it, change their ways. If that bullet, God forbid, had hit Donald Trump in the head in Butler, and you got to watch Donald Trump be assassinated on live television, it would have jarred you, it would have stuck with you for the rest of your life. You would have been outraged and sad and everything, and it's tempting to think that maybe, if that bullet had struck, these people would change, they would stop, they would apologize, they would own it, they would not have. As I mentioned, if a nuclear bomb went off tomorrow in New York City and a communist set it off the next day, they would be doing things to try to move the revolution forward. You are dealing with a demonic power. Communism is of the devil. These people have no shame. They will never change their ways. They will never apologize. The only thing you can do is isolate these people from power, keep them from power now and forever, completely destroy the institutions who produce them, get the foreigners out of the country because they elect them, and stop the election cheating by passing the SAVE Act. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an amazing show for you. All kinds of scandal and things going on. Did you take your male vitality stack or female vitality stack from Chalk today? I did. Did you? You see, Chalk, it's natural. That's what I love about it. I know that testosterone levels are in free fall. I got it. You have obviously noticed in the last 10 or 15 years all these men's clinics, and you know why. Testosterone levels are down, and men know it. They feel it. Their energy's low. It's terrible. But we need to fix this problem naturally. Natural herbal supplements, a male vitality stack from Chalk, clinically tested, 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days. That's what I'm talking about. Go get a subscription, chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. The Supreme Court is such a critically important confusing subject. It's something we try to touch on as much as possible, but I'm uneducated and stupid, and so we have to bring on people to discuss what's actually going on and why it's going on and how bad they're about to screw us or help us. Who knows? I bet Molly knows. Joining me now, Molly Hemingway, author of a book about somebody you should really learn about. Alito. Anyway, that's the title of the book. Alito and Clarence Thomas may very well be our two greatest living Americans. Molly, okay, let's start with redistricting. Virginia's in the story, Texas is in the story, Florida's in the story, all these states are doing it. Is this just what's going to happen now? Is the Supreme Court just going to let all this go?
Well, I think that redistricting is something that Democrats have actually done a very good job with over the years. They've figured out how to squeeze the maximum number of seats out of a state using whatever power they have. Republicans are, as per usual, a little late to the game, but they could, if they wanted to, manage to get quite a few more seats out of similar redistricting efforts. But there are some interesting cases in front of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court usually doesn't like to get involved in election administration or anything related to elections. It's actually something no judge really enjoys being part of it. It's complicated. It gets people angry no matter which side you're on. But there is a case we're waiting on from the Supreme Court, for instance, right now, that deals with whether racial gerrymandering is okay or not. It's expected that Justice Alito will be writing the majority opinion striking those districts down.
Molly, the Supreme Court has normally been pretty tight-lipped about many things. No leaks. I don't remember in my life before the Dobbs decision ever hearing about a leak coming from the Supreme Court. Even the dirty commies on there really kept a tight lid on things. But then Dobbs' decision got leaked, and of course we have assassins flying to shoot Brett Kavanaugh in the face, and now we have a problem on our hands. What happened?
There have been several little leaks over the years. You know, someone might leak a memo, or there might be leaks after a justice leaves the court of certain papers that expose things. But we've never seen anything like the willful leaking of the majority decision in Dobbs. And immediately when that happened, the left reacted with unbelievable violence, as you note, assassination attempts. Each of the justices who had been courageous enough to sign on to the Dobbs decision had their lives threatened. They had to be moved to secure locations. They had to wear bulletproof vests. And the response from people was pretty blasé. You had the Department of Justice, even though there are laws against threatening a federal judge to try to change his mind on an opinion, the DOJ did nothing. Merrick Garland did nothing. President Biden had his spokesperson say that they were pretty happy that the protests were going the way they were going. It was a very bad situation. And nothing was really done about it. Big part of Alito, my book, looks into that leak investigation, how it was run, how poorly it was run, how ineffective it was. You know, they would just ask people, did you leak? Instead of asking, tell me about your relationship with the reporter who published this, or tell me about your relationship with the people who work at that publication. So it was very easy for everybody to deny involvement because it wasn't really a good, thorough investigation. And now you're seeing the result of it. You have additional leaks, and you also have the liberal justices continuing to behave in political ways. We recently saw Sonia Sotomayor attacking Brett Kavanaugh. They're undermining the integrity of the court. They're kind of breaking every norm we had associated with the court.
Molly, I know you go into this in depth in your book, Alito, but it's hard for me to believe that the justices, because we do have the majority who were there, would not demand higher levels of security, a better investigation. Do they not have the authority? Did they not try?
You know, it's interesting. They'd like to just do their work as judges. It was Chief Justice John Roberts' job to manage that leak investigation. I don't think there's... I don't think people are thrilled with how it went, but also what they were dealing with was unprecedented. And they're not political. Like, they don't have PR shops or communication shops or political strategists. They're just a judge with four clerks who are elite graduates of elite law schools, and they don't really have the means of managing this type of political operation against them. They're having to deal with massive propaganda farms like ProPublica running hit pieces against them. And then the other thing is, there's one way of life for the liberal justices and another for the conservatives. The liberals, they can go appear on a Broadway play, they can go to the Grammys, they can party with Beyonce, they can travel all over the world, and if they get noticed, it's just to praise them. And then the conservatives, they and their spouses and their children can't go to dinner together because they might get killed. So that disparity means that the liberal justices are really kind of out of touch with what the conservatives are going through.
Molly, is it broken beyond repair? And I ask that this way is, once trust like this is violated, and once you have these little commie activists doing these types of things, it's very hard for me to believe with lifetime appointments that we can put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
I do not think it is broken with beyond repair. In fact, the court seems to operate pretty well, even with the stresses that it has been put under. It is probably the most effective branch of government. The Supreme Court is the most effective part of the judicial branch of government. The problems with the judicial branch are really with those district judges who are helping Democrats engage in lawfare against a duly elected presidency and going to war against the American people. That does need to be tamped down. It needs to be dealt with very harshly, but the court itself actually operates pretty well. The problem is, a good Supreme Court decision doesn't save the republic. You need to have much more happening than just that, and you need to have the people understanding the seriousness of the problem as well. Clarence Thomas recently gave a speech about that. Justice Alito has also given a speech about that, really calling on the people to live up to their founding ideals.
While the political nerds like us remember when Donald Trump was president and RBG was 8,000 years old, and the American media was running puff pieces every day trying to basically keep her alive through willpower, and they failed, and they lost a lot because of that. Alito, as much as I love him, is old. What's the plan?
So he is the second oldest justice on the court, but he's the third longest serving justice. So all three of those, there's Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Thomas, who has indicated he does not appreciate being pressured to get off the court, and Justice Alito. I think they're all cognizant of the political winds in play, but the fact is, Alito and Thomas are probably completely irreplaceable, and conservatives should be happy as long as they're able to serve, conscious of the political considerations. And Justice Alito, and I tell the story in the book about why he's so unique, why he's so special, and why conservatives in particular should value his jurisprudence and the way he approaches things. He's just gotten win after win. And I think if he felt, and if Justice Thomas felt, that the younger guys were doing a better job of getting up to speed, you might see them also be more comfortable with leaving.
Plus, I don't know about our bench. I don't hear great things, Molly. I don't know that we have an Alito waiting in the wings, unless you've heard otherwise.
There are many excellent federal judges who would be well-suited to replace either Alito or Thomas or the Chief Justice. And there has been this long-running effort to build up the conservative legal movement. Not everybody is great, but a lot of them are. And a lot of them have shown over time that they're able to withstand pressure, be consistent, be clear. And you need a little bit of that time to see whether people get strong on the bench. Sometimes people try to choose youth so much over actual quality that you should balance these things out. Yes, having someone who serves a long time is good, but having someone who just knows what they're doing and is unswayed, that's also important. But I hope that should there be an opening, that the people in power will make good decisions, and they certainly have many great options to choose from.
Molly, where am I supposed to buy this book?
You can buy it anywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I am so happy. I knew I wanted to write about Alito. I was curious who he was. All these, you know, his colleagues on the court said, this is the guy who's really important. You should follow him. And I'm thrilled that people are reading it and enjoying it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
Go pick it up. I think you will enjoy it. Molly, you're the best. Come back. All right. Let me ask you something. This is a question. Do you, when you're going to buy something, whatever that something may be, do you prioritize companies that hire Americans? Is that something you even look into? If you say no, that's fine, because I live most of my life like that too. But as we've watched the jobs market disappear for Americans, as we watch young people, older people, just impossible to find work, I think we need to get back to prioritizing American companies who hire Americans. Switching from Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile to Pure Talk is a no-brainer. You're on the same towers. You get amazing customer service. When you switch, you speak to an American who speaks English. You save a fortune. Their CEO fought for this country. There's just no reason not to switch. I want you to go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and make the switch today. We'll be back. I am a very happy man today. I have to probably wager that I'm the second happiest guy in the United States of America today, because Jeffrey Tucker has been screaming about accountability for the evils done to us under COVID for a very long time. He has written about it extensively. He and I have talked about it extensively. And maybe what happened today says we're going to get some of it. It's never going to be everything. It's never going to be everyone, but maybe we're getting something. Joining me now, founder of the Brownstone Institute, the great Jeffrey A. Tucker. Jeffrey, tell me the good news.
Well, the good news is that David Morans, Fauci's co-author and longtime assistant and collaborator of 25 years, has been indicted by the Department of Justice for destruction of documents and more, including probably the appearance of gifts and blackmail and other kind of nefarious deeds in the early COVID period that extended throughout the lockdowns. Morans is a very interesting guy. He's now 78 years old. Fauci found him at the CDC, and Morans was very loyal to Fauci, although I suspect that over time he began to despise him, actually, and mostly just lived in fear of being found out for all the things that they were doing, as he called them, the shenanigans that they participated in together. And in an email sent, I think, to Daszak, Peter Daszak, the head of Eco Health Alliance, the guy through which they channeled all the funding for the Wuhan lab. In an email to him, he said, I really hope that if I go to jail, that I'll be free to speak and tell the truth about what's been going on around here. And I'll be very blunt and truthful about it all. So I suspect that prosecutors think of him as the guy who's going to sing. And then this is the beginning. This starts the dominoes to fall. And I also don't think it's a and I don't think it's a coincidence that Comey got prosecuted yet again today also.
Okay, so I understand we're dealing with allegations here, but when you start dropping bombs on us like accepting gifts, destroying documents, of course, everybody sits up in their chair and wants to know, what exactly do we think he did and why? Explain.
So, sometime in January, Jeremy Farrar at Wellness and Anthony Fauci got word that the Wuhan Institute of Virology very likely either deliberately or accidentally leaked a pathogen called SARS-CoV-2. It's kind of a cousin of the original SARS. And they believed that they were likely responsible for this leak, or that they would be blamed for a global pandemic that started in China and that it would eventually be traced to them. So they had to think quickly. And their very first thought was, well, let's prove that the virus is of zoonotic origin, which means that it jumped from some biological creature to humans, and was not the consequence of a lab leak. So that was their first thought, and they tasked three scientists, a small team, with writing a paper that would say that. Oddly, the scientists didn't even believe what they wrote, as we know from later FOIA requests. They were just told to come to that conclusion. And then they got grants from the NIH as a kind of a gift for having written that paper that later appeared in Nature. So they were interested in covering up their role in the lab leak. And the next question was, well, what do we do? Let's say that we convince the world this is actually a zoonotic origin. What are we going to do about the pathogen itself? And up pops Moderna and Pfizer to invent an inoculation based on mRNA technology, modified mRNA technology that Fauci had been working on for 20, even 30 years, dating back to his AIDS work. And now they had an opportunity in the midst of an emergency to get the mRNA shot shoved through with an indemnification, thanks to emergency use authorization. And so the idea of this part of the scheme was that Fauci, instead of being considered the great enemy, would be considered the savior of humanity. Okay, that was the idea. But the problem was a matter of timing. How quickly could it be done? Now, once you can sequence a virus, mRNA can generate the shot pretty quickly, but they still had to at least go through the look and feel of a trial. So during that time, the problem was, how do you preserve the immunological naivety of the population? In other words, how do you keep people from being exposed to the virus and gaining immunity without the shot? Because if that happened, I mean, if we achieved endemicity and herd immunity before the shot was released, then the shot wouldn't get all the credit. So what's the answer? Well, the answer is lockdowns and social distancing. Let's keep people as far apart as possible. Make them hide in their homes. Close the schools, close the businesses, close the churches, ban meetings. And that way, people we could minimize the chance of exposure and thus recovery from the virus in anticipation of the release of the shot. Now, Trump was likely persuaded to go along with this scheme on the promise that the shot would be available by summer. It seemed like a decent estimation of time, because you recall that it was March 16th, the day of that very first press conference that Trump gave, that they gave their first injection for the test subjects. So, let's say you have two months of testing. You could start distribution by summer. But then there's another problem that they thought, well, why not use this as a chance to drive Trump out of office? He's annoying us. He's a problem for the deep state. He imagines himself to be president. We really need to get this guy. Let's just roll these lockdowns ever more through the summer, through the fall, and keep them going all the way to November. We already have the CDC having recommended mail-in ballots to the entire country. They did that already on March 12th. So all the election systems were already being reconfigured for mail-in ballots. So it was very easy to rig. If there's a problem by the end of by the election in November, we'll just get the mail-in ballots to work and get this guy out of here. So this seems like an audacious plan, but it just kept sort of working. I mean, the first 2 weeks worked, and then Fauci and Birx went to Trump and got another 30 days. And I thought, well, if you're going to give it 30 days, how much longer can we continue it? By the end of the second request, the bureaucracy was already controlled. There's no way that Trump could put these monkeys back in the barrel, right? I mean, so he was reduced to just, writing on Twitter, free Michigan, free whatever, and wasn't actually in a position to stop the bureaucracy. And this continued all the way to the election. So they had everything laid out. And Morenz was a very critical player here. He knew all the plots and schemes, everything that was going on. I mean, he was privy to all this stuff. It drove him to drink, by the way. If you read through his emails, it's amazing how much he talks about martinis, actually. I feel kind of bad for the guy. I kind of get it. I mean, it's a pretty stressful life. He's just Fauci's trusted assistant and is now tasked with all these, keeping all these secrets and being his kind of henchman. The big problem, the big flaw in the scheme was the shot itself. It didn't work. It had a terrible profile on efficacy and safety. So that became very... It was known already in the trials that this thing was very dangerous. They never should have released it, but they had the scheme going. So it became known to the public in the spring of 21 that it could not stop transmission, that it would not stop infection, that you would get COVID anyway, meaning that it actually conferred no public health benefit whatsoever. And then the safety profile became a big issue by the fall of 2021. So they had gone a full year and a half with all this, with these plots and schemes just to cover up a lab leak. And now they're coming to the end of the line because the shot was actually catastrophically terrible. So they had to engage in yet another cover up of the efficacy and this, particularly on the safety. And that cover up continues to this day. And I think it's going to be unearthed in the coming year. But yeah, I think this is the scheme as best I can figure it out. It sounds like the wildest movie plot you've ever heard in your life. Like, you can't even believe this kind of stuff goes on in government. The most shocking thing about it is the treatment of the population as lab rats and their weird experiment, and the sadistic willingness to use the entire population this way, destroy people's education, ruin the lives of children, violate the Bill of Rights and religious liberties, crush millions of businesses, wipe out a third of the purchasing power of the dollar, that you would do all of this to avoid culpability for having funded gain-of-function research in the lab in Wuhan. It's a shocking level of malevolence that I don't think we've seen in our lifetime. It seems just simply unbelievable, but it's a good illustration of what people are willing to do in their own self-interest if they have the power to do it.
Well, praise God we get something. Jeffrey, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I just get mad all over again when I think back to all that evil. Anyway, Liz Collin will make us feel better. Maybe. I don't know. There was a big bust today in Minnesota, which is a good thing, but it was so big, it's one of those, how bad is it up there? Talk to Liz next. Well, I woke up today and did the same thing you do when you wake up. Don't lie, I know you do. I rolled over and I grabbed my phone, and after I turned off my alarm, I started looking at the news and I saw the FBI swarming into, do we want to call them child care facilities? Child care facilities in Minneapolis. That seems like kind of a big deal. So, you know, we had to reach out to our favorite Liz Collins, senior reporter at Alpha News, to school us on what exactly is going on in the land of 10,000 lakes. Liz, tell us what happened.
Hey, Jesse, the land of 10,000 frauds. That's kind of what we've been known as, but we have the number 22, I guess, to talk about today, but 22 search warrants in all executed at multiple locations all around Minneapolis. I'm sure that's nowhere near the end of all of this, but this is daycare centers that were raided today, at least 5 autism centers, a senior center, again, all for the most part around the Minneapolis area. But we were seeing FBI agents, HSI agents, BCA agents, so state and federal agents working together on all of this, just carting out boxes and bags for hours at different locations. You know, I was saying before that I don't think this comes as much of a surprise, Jesse. I think people are hoping for more locations and arrest warrants at the end of all of this is what folks, I think, are after, and actual real accountability. But you'll remember Tom Holman promised back in February when Operation Metro Surge ended that, hey, they're going to keep federal agents here just to investigate fraud. And I think it takes a while, obviously, to build these cases, and that's what's been going on behind the scenes for a couple of months. So obviously they felt comfortable enough today to go in and, you know, start this process, do these raids at these 22 locations, Jesse.
Okay, Liz, I understand there's a lot we don't know. Like you said, we don't even have arrests yet. We have internet videos. You've been reporting right on this whole thing. So I guess I'm going to ask the lamest question possible. What do we think was happening here?
Well, I think it's what has been suspected all along, right? There are thousands of Somali businesses in Minnesota. I've said all along, it's just kind of out in the open fraud that they try to just pretend, you know, is either not happening or downplay that. And we've seen that from Governor Tim Walz. He's been working overtime this morning on X. It's really quite something to see, basically taking credit for these investigations. The FBI director quickly came out, Kash Patel, and, you know, kind of called him out on X, which was quite entertaining. But saying that, you know, fraud is not a big deal here in Minnesota. It's no bigger than any other state. But remember, it's $9 billion in fraud. That's what we've heard. We've heard as high as $20 billion. And I don't think they really even know how high this goes at this point.
Okay, Liz, can you give me some sort of a sense of how much political or, I guess, legal trouble Tim Walz might be in, or any Democrat? Do you believe there are Democrats in the political power structure who were knowingly aiding all this fraud?
You know, it was just a couple of weeks ago that impeachment articles were introduced against Governor Tim Walz and also our Attorney General Keith Ellison. They're saying, you know, Minnesotans want accountability. You guys have been in office. You've known about this. Whistleblowers have come forward to warn you. And in many cases, the lives of these whistleblowers have been ruined. You know, and that's been documented again and again. But the Democrats shot that down. They voted, nope, we're not going to go ahead and move this investigation forward. You know, if there is nothing to hide, then why not let this investigation play out? And that's why it has taken the federal government to get involved here. I will say that the state of the state, Governor Walz, is giving his last state of the state address this evening as the governor of Minnesota, which I thought was quite funny, if you will, as to why the raids took place today. But he is not running for re-election again. And I will say that many people have said all along, including state employees, that this leads all the way to the governor and the attorney general, taking money. This is all documented from many of these fraudsters who have already been prosecuted. And that was just in another fraud case, the Feeding Our Future $250 million fraud that is still ongoing. Mm.
It's wild that $250 million is one of the smaller ones we're discussing here. Yeah. What about Ilhan Omar? Obviously, she's right-wing fodder. Everybody loves to hate her, myself included. But it's hard not to notice when she's closing down wineries, she's revising her net worth. Are there dirty tracks that lead to Ilhan Omar's door?
Or perhaps we're in the middle of World War XI. That was the clip that has been circulating. Yeah. Again, but yes, she provides quite a bit of material. But again, when we're speaking of fraud, you're right. This winery, it's an office building. There's no winery. The fact that you know, her net worth came crashing down after, you know, it went from tens of millions of dollars to not so much now anymore after her accountant just discovered this error. But also questions about her citizenship. That remained to be unanswered. Her citizenship, allegations she married her brother, committing immigration fraud for him to basically become a citizen. So there's a long list, and many people still awaiting answers surrounding the Congresswoman as well, Jesse.
Liz, what is the deportation situation in Minnesota? And I ask the question this way. Obviously, Greg Bovino was retired by the Trump administration, brought in Tom Holman, everybody loves him. And then we've noticed that the communists are not running street activism anymore up there. It's hard not to notice that deportations are down in the first quarter of 2026. Are we not deporting as many people from Minnesota anymore?
I just want to correct you that they are still running operations. They have folks, Jesse, stationed still outside of schools. There are actually agitators that were on the scene today of these raids, Jesse, that are getting license plates of the federal agents that were on scene. So no, that is an ongoing issue. They're still outside the federal building in Minneapolis, that horrific assault that took place against the TPUSA reporter. No charges have been filed against the three people who are pushing her on camera. So that is ongoing. But I will say we've highlighted a few of these arrests. One, in fact, was a former state employee who should have been deported by now. This is going on now, I want to say, 5 or 6 months, and he has yet to be deported. We were aware during Operation Metro Surge they had planes filled with people here illegally that were flown out of Minnesota. But I think, you know, kind of our so-called justice system in Minnesota, they've been doing their best. Many of these judges appointed by Governor Walz himself doing their best to you know, keep these folks here and sort of fight, I guess, if you will, the Trump administration at every turn.
Liz, come back soon. We love you. All right. I almost forgot that Savannah Hernandez was assaulted, and that was in Minnesota. I remembered she was assaulted. I'd love to see her and Liz collab on something. But anyway, let's do Light in the Boot next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And one thing that I guess gives me a great deal of comfort is that so many of our mortal enemies are very, very dumb. Yes, they're evil and they're going to do a lot of damage, and they've done a lot of damage. There's no question about it. But so many of them are just dumb. And we would probably be in a great deal of trouble if they were intelligent, but they're just dumb. I don't know that there's a better face for what I just described than Ilhan Omar. Now, of course, she has limitations that are just going to kind of have her lean that way. She's from Somalia. Anyway, here she was.
The last time the Alien Enemies Act was invoked, it was used to detain and deport German, Japanese, Italian immigrants during World War II.
Look, Roman numerals, they're not easy. They get me sometimes, too. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.